Take it to the top.
Here we are again. This is Take It to the Top with your host, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer, Richie Phillips. I'm a former radio morning show co-host on a country music radio station in Albany, New York. It was WGNA. I had a fabulous 29 years in morning radio and now pursuing the podcasting route. And the idea of this podcast, very simple. We pick a category. I try to take it to the top until I get the top person or persons in that category. The category today, really, I guess, should be top author. And coincidentally, it's about country music. It definitely caught my attention. This is going to be really, really fun to find out the background of some of the greatest hits in country music. Today I'm going to be speaking with Nashville-based music biographer Jake Brown. He has written 45 books, but none of them about country music. This is the first time he's ever attacked the country genre. He's the author of the critically acclaimed Nashville Songwriter, The Inside Stories Behind Country Music's Greatest Hits. He did that one in 2014 and decided to do a part two. So he's going to release Nashville Songwriter 2, The Inside Stories Behind Country Music's Greatest Hits. It's going to be available October the 15th in physical copies and digital copies. He interviewed 35 of Music City's most well-known songwriters who have together amassed 300 number one hits for his 500-page project. He sent me an excerpt from the book, and he doesn't go into this too deeply in the interview, so I wanted to read this. One of the songwriters, her name is Lori McKenna. She's written a ton of great hits, including, you'll recognize this one, I think, Humble and Kind, the big Tim McGraw hit. And this is the background of this song, just to show you where songs can come out of thin air sometimes. She said she had just gotten her kids off to school, and I guess in the back of her mind, she always wanted to tell her kids like an entire list of things. I guess you would call it codes of conduct. You should be good. You should be humble. You should be, you know, sympathetic to people. You should be friendly, blah, 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 blah. So she decided to make a list. It took her an entire day to write it. And when she went in and picked up the kids from school, cooked them dinner and all that stuff, then her husband came home. She was still tweaking the list. She finished it up and she played it for him. She put it to music and played it for him. He said, oh my God, that is really good. So she recorded it on her phone and she emailed it to Tim McGraw, and Tim McGraw went insane and absolutely loved it. Do you believe it? That's where that song came from. She also wrote a little song called Girl Crush. Very controversial song, but I'll tell you, that became a huge hit too. Unbelievable. That's just one of the stories in this book. So I thought we'd have him on the podcast, and we have him right here. Jake Brown.
Good morning. Well, actually, afternoon where you are, morning where I am. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, this is fantastic. I'm sure people are going to be very interested in this. Now, your book, which is actually a part two, comes out, what, October the 15th?
Yeah, do you want me to give you a little like elevator speech backstory on it?
Sure, absolutely.
Kind of sums up the okay. So the journey of this series, I specialize in two kinds of books. In 45, this is my 45th published, ironically. In 20 years, and I moved here 17 years ago with two books published, and the other 42 have come since. So I have specialized in anthologies that either are like my In the Studio series, which I've co-written books with everyone from Heart and Nancy Wilson, Lemmy, Kilmeister, late great Motorhead frontman, Tupac Shakur's date. And I kind of developed through that this interest in these behind-the-scenes stories about, you know, with this series, the idea was to take you in the writer's room. But really, there had never been a series on the actual songwriters that create the bulk of what you hear on radio. And a lot of people who are novice country fans wouldn't really know it if they were just listening, that there's been a rich, you know, God, almost 100-year history of what's called catalog recording, where a song could get written in 1960 and get recorded by seven or eight different generations of artists. In any event, how that shifted is, you know, if you look at a CMA or a CMT music video, most music videos don't give you the songwriter. They give you the artist, right, the label, the album, the song. Now, country music's the only one where they give you that distinction, which also illustrates how it's special. So we really wanted to put a spotlight. I'm a songwriter myself. It's more the rock stuff than country, but I wanted to really, really put the spotlight on the Nashville songwriter. And then when I started banging around titles, I thought, yeah, there's just no way that this title isn't taken already. And amazingly, it was just, for me, like striking gold. When you're writing books, you got to have, you know, really catchy titles, but that's the concept. to sell this on, you know, because even before the public sees it, you have to go out and A&R and recruit all these songwriters, you know? So anyway, long story short, no one had it, amazingly. And I did a book with Joe Satriani called Strange Beautiful Music, his memoir, and we sold it, and I pitched that publisher, and this was back in 2013. I had 19 writers in that first book, so guys like Bill Anderson, Craig Wiseman, legends on Music Row, Sonny Curtis, who wrote I Fought the Law on the Law 1.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that wrote Crazy, Arms, I mean, just lots of great hits. Willie Nelson was in the first book. Merle Haggard was in the first book. Freddie Bowers, who rest in peace, both of them. And on. And it was really a Tom T. Hall. And then you had guys like Brett James, who are still really out there doing it. Ashley Gorley, Dallas Davidson, Kelly Lovelace. So long story short, that was a 19-chapter book. So when I got the chance to do a second one, I really wanted to take my time. So this, it took 4 years to write the second book. I write three or four books at once. But this one, I was consistently emailing and interviewing and phone, you know, and in person. I mean, God, I talked to some of these writers 4 and 5 times because they kept having number ones. And naturally, we wanted to be as current with their catalog as
possible.
Oh, right.
You have to update it all the time. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So now that we've finally done, there's 35 writers. It's every big writer on Music Row working in Music Today. These are the top number one writers in country, period. So Shane McNally, Josh Keir wrote most people. McNally wrote, you know, got million number ones, Body Like a Back Road. Ross Copperman, who's Dirk Bentley's main guy, among others. All the way back to Whitey, legends like Whitey Schaefer, who wrote All My Exes Live in Texas.
Wow.
And everyone in between. There's a really strong female presence in the book. So Hillary Lindsay is probably the most legendary and iconic female songwriter working in the business today. She's got, you know, 25 number ones, almost Natalie Hemby, Nicole Galeon, Matresa Berg. So anyway, we've got Lori McKenna, Liz Rose, who wrote Taylor Swift, a lot of the early Taylor Swift country hits. Lori McKenna, of course, is a star in her own right, but wrote Humble and Kind.
Did she write Girl Crush? Yeah, I was just going to say she wrote
She did,
Girl.
Yeah, along with Liz and Hillary. And what's really cool is with throughout the book, we really wanted to take the reader inside the writing room.
Yeah.
And then also really gives you like a back and forth conversational kind of vibe as you read it. So I have, there's some narrative that introduces hits or talks about background, but we really tried to make this as much the songwriters as possible. So over 520 pages, you get, you know, 35 chapters, you get 300 number one hits, and then you get a bunch of just, you know, really solid top 5 and top 10 and top 20. But you get every artist, too. Like, if you want to understand what Carrie Underwood's like as a writer, or Luke Bryan, or Keith Urban, or whomever in the room, these are the people that sit in there with them every day. Because so much now, there's these artists writing, kind of co-writing teams. But also, there's a lot of cool tour bus stories. And also on top of that, you know, you got guys like Cole Swindell and Red Akins in the book who are also recording artists, Lori McKenna. So you really get the full 3D picture of what it's like to aspire to come to Nashville, spend 10 years, you know, working your way up the charts, get your first number one, have it go on hold, and then no one record it for 3 years before it hits the top again.
Yeah,
all of the ups and downs and then staying on top. The whole essence of being a songwriter, a national songwriter in this town.
So you're saying that maybe that's a new trend that a lot of the artists sit in with the writers? Because I always picture...
Well, it's recent. It's recent because, yeah. To be fair, you got a guy like Keith Urban or
right.
Brad Paisley. Those are legitimate songs. You know, well, they're all legitimate. Those are guys who came here, though, first playing guitar. But then, you know, Carrie Underwood, mind you, started writing on her second record with, you know, after the Before He Cheats album. She really grew into a songwriter with these people like co-captains, like Hillary Lindsay and Brett James and Chris DeStefano, and now Zach Krause, Sam Hunt's producer, and Ashley Gorley. So you really get the insight from the other half of their musical brain, if you will, about how they work, when they're creating, and just all that really special in the writing room. It's a rare look, really. We're proud of that, and across that spectrum. And it's just, this is everybody, man, like, you know, George Strait, Jason Aldean. I'm just reading some names. Taylor Swift, Tim McGraw, Luke Bryan.
Everybody. Why don't you just say everybody?
Yeah, Sam Hunt, right. You know, Lady Antebellum, Dirk Bentley, Miranda Lambert. You get on and on and on. Thomas Rhett. And you really get, like, a look at, like, wow, how do these people work? How do they get their start? And then with the songwriters, and then I'll shut up and let you finish.
This is what I pictured this was going to be. It's basically you
speaking.
Yeah, man,
the other thing, I appreciate it. I'm excited. The other thing we really got to do that I'm proud of is we literally went the other side of the first, you know, aspect with the book. You're a country fan, you want to stream along, listen to your favorite hits, you can read how they were written. The other aspect of this, though, we wanted to go all the way back to the very beginning. Who put the guitar in their hand? What kind of music did they grow up on? Did they come from Texas? Did they come from Georgia? Did they play football? Did they farm? Rodney Clausen, who got it, you know, written a load of hits. I mean, for everybody from Jason Aldean, Amarillo Sky, and, you know, Big and Rich Lost His Home, and all the way up to now. I mean, that guy's all over everything. Dirt by Florida Georgia Line, and Get Your Shine On, and Around Here, and et cetera. He was a farmer till he was 28. And get this, he was John Rich's football coach in junior high. And then John Rich actually came up to see a show, like, hey, you know, coach, you want to come see us? We're in town. And Clausen had been writing songs on his tractor for his combine while he's been out there farming. So you really, I mean, it's so cool how authentically these guys, are the, from the people they write about. They are those same people. This is not a fake. These are the real lives that these people reflect of the listeners of country music. That's who they are, too. And we wanted to talk about family members, wives that have been supportive, people in their early careers, you know, failures, successes. So you really get their full stories even before the hits ever started.
You go back to John Rich. He doesn't need any help writing. He's written about 500 songs himself,
but he talks about, he does talk about the importance of you know, that teamwork element of Music Row in Nashville and the community that are these songwriters. A lot of these people write in permanent co-writing teams. Shay McNally, Josh Osborne, Ashley Gorley writes with everybody, but, you know, Chris DeStefano and him, Dallas Davidson, Red Akins. Of course, the Peacemakers are in this book. Dallas Davidson, Red Akins, and Ben Hayslip. So you really get the full spectrum of, like, how important it is to come here and write with people so you can network and you get better gigs playing out, you know, writer rounds and getting invited to little parties where you meet other songwriters. And it just really gives you the full community, but also how tough it is to crack that community. You know what I mean?
Now Jake, you're driving. Are you driving as we're speaking?
I am driving as we speak.
So you're not reading from notes.
I'm doing well. This book is such a permanent imprint in my mind.
Unbelievable. How you can rattle off all these names is just phenomenal.
Well, I have a photographic memory, thankfully, but luckily with this book, it's like with these writers, I mean, I've gotten to know some of them so well through writing over three or four years, four or five conversations, follow-ups. They introduced me to other writers that were harder to get. And you know, the other thing that's really cool, to your point, is that let's say that you're a kid out there in Georgia somewhere in the middle of wherever, but so-and-so songwriter came from a town an hour from you. This book, if you're really, really, really impassioned with songwriting and you've already got a guitar and you're already, you know, playing along to your favorite Luke Bryan songs, chances are you're actually also playing along to your favorite of these songwriter songs. And the key difference is these songwriters, as much as Luke Bryan, these songwriters came from an hour from you, or they came from the same state, or they came from the same, and it just gives encouragement, hopefully, because you really get the full spectrum of how hard these guys had to work, how their families drove them all over creation, you know, playing at Dollywood and 4-H. Hillary Lindsay's family's a driver all over Georgia. Josh Osborne, his dad and mom used to drive him to Nashville on the weekend as a teenager. You know what I mean? So you see how long the journeys that they really, really went through to get there were.
Well, didn't Taylor Swift's parents used to drive her to Nashville, and she jumped out of the car and started banging on doors on Music Row?
And that's the story with a lot of people. Yeah. It also talks about Belmont, the importance. And, you know, another thing we have in here, proudly, I did a 30-page chapter with all of the big music publishers. So everyone from BMG and Warner Chappell to the writer-run houses like Smack and, of course, favorite Creative Nation, excuse me, with Luke and Beth Laird and Ashley Gorley's Tape Room. Dallas Davidson, Play It Again, Resonant. You really, really get like a front row seat in understanding how competitive and tough and important having a good publisher is. Because, you know, the other thing that happened is really talented writer can come to town here, and like everywhere in the music business, they can wind up signing, you know, not the best deal. You know what I mean? So it really gives you a lot. It's like a Bible without being disrespectful of a good book worth of advice through these 500 pages on the business side, the creative side, the personalities, these guys riding along in their car and they get an idea or they hear something at a ball game, someone says, and the next day they're sitting in a room writing a song about it. And then a year later it's on the radio. It's really a trip.
Exactly. You were talking about writers that might live a mile away from a person who's an aspiring songwriter. That brings up a good point. In Albany, we had two gentlemen, Billy Montana. Does that ring a bell?
I can't say it does, but that's just because I'm just here. But there's a brilliant, great network of songwriters and festivals all over the country, too. People go play, and they come to town. So
right.
He's probably known among them.
Well, he's very well known. He wrote More Than a Memory for Garth. That was his comeback hit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. Okay.
He co-wrote Suds in the Bucket for Sarah Evans, and he's from Albany, and
yeah,
I happen
sure.
to know him. Also, another gentleman I've gotten to know fairly well from being on the radio, Eddie Kilgallen from Ricochet. That was the original band, and now he's Montgomery Gentry. He's the keyboard player and the musical director of Montgomery Gentry.
Sure.
From what I understand, he's actually singing Troy Gentry's parts now because of that awful, awful tragedy. What a loss.
And he wrote One Night at a Time, the song of the year for George Strait.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing with the George Strait stuff, so the first book I had Dean Dillon, and then there were a few other people that had hits with him, and we thought, man, we've got, you know, like, 40% of the George Strait number one, so 50% between the two books. But to your point, of your guy, that guy is such a great song picker. He's had, 60 number one?
Yeah.
There could almost be a book of writers that do the George Strait hit. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Once you get on his album, you've got him in.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, you come from a hip-hop background. I mean, you've written books about hip-hop artists. I'm trying
to picture. This is always funny, man.
Yeah.
Shook Knight. Death Row Records CEO, who's now heading to prison for the rest of his life for that running over that guy at the Straight Outta
Compton.
But
yep.
When I was 24, I grew up really, really, really influenced by Death Row Records and Dr. Dre, and I grew up in the 90s and 80s. So, I started out writing hip-hop books, and Shook Knight was my first book. A guy named Tony Rose gave me my first shot. Amber Books, and then I published for them for 5 or 6 years with all I could do was rap books. So I did Jay-Z, 50 Cent, Tupac Shakur. I launched a series I have a trademark on called In the Studio with the estate Mafini Shakur for the Tupac book. And long story short is I did 8 or 9 of them before I did a book with this band, rock band legendary, Rock Band Heart, with Anna Nancy Wilson,
sure.
called Heart in the Studio. And then I wrote a book with Lemmy Kilmister called Motorhead in the Studio. And I started doing this series that was these behind-the-scenes interviews of producers, the band members, talk about the songwriting, how they were recorded. That led to a series called Behind the Boards. And the long story short is eventually led me to the National Songwriter concept of, gosh, there's no books that have ever been done on the songwriters. And I'm not trying to give myself any extra credit. I'm just saying, lucky for me as a writer, A, no one had done it. There'd been a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, but not a comprehensive chapter-length profiles on these guys, brilliant writers. But B, I said, there's no way that the most obvious title for this is National Songwriter, right? And there's like the NSAI, there's the National Songwriters Association, but there had never been a book series. I was like, that's crazy. There's not a memoir. And thank God no one had it. So I immediately trademarked it.
Yeah,
and
good for you.
Yeah, sold it. So here we are. So luckily, we're booked 2 into the series. There's almost 55 writers between the two of them. If you're more an audiobook fan, Blackstone Audio releases the audiobook on November 7th. The ebook and the physical book come out on October 15th. So no matter your format, you can stream along, you put on your old school records, you can play your CDs, whatever. If you want to read about how these hits were created, right up to the present, you got it.
You're listening to Take It to the Top, the podcast, and we are speaking with Jake Brown, the Nashville Songwriter 2 author, the inside stories behind country music's greatest hits. I hate to put a date on a podcast because by the time you're listening to this, I'm sure it's out. But the physical and digital copies are available October the 15th. You can go on Amazon or wherever fine books are sold. And as you're listening to this podcast, you may be wondering, gee, how can I hire Richie for my next party, anniversary party, retirement party, conference, meeting, business function? Well, all you got to do is go to my website.
HireRichie.com. That's HireRichie.com.
Let's return now to Jake Brown.
You know, I was thinking, though, with your background being in hip-hop and you went to country, I was thinking...
In rock,
about,
yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking the title of your book should be From Urban to Keith Urban. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
From
go ahead, from Biggie Smalls to...
Biggie and Rich. Biggie and Rich, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From Lady Gaga to Lady Antebellum. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's crazy, man, with the hip-hop stuff? I did a very identical to National Songwriter thing last year called Hip-Hop Hits. And its companion audiobook was Doctors of Rhythm, and it was all legendary hip-hop producers. But I've got a book coming out next year with Big Smo,
Okay.
Who is a legend. You know, he's really, well, I'm Colt Ford. They founded basically, you know, maybe Bubba Sparks, the country rap genre. And we, we're very excited about that. It's called My Life in a Jar, the Book of Smo. And in, you know, what's cool about that book and really the country rap crossover, you see, like, with This Is How We Roll, which Cole Swindell is also a national songwriter. So you get his story and the story behind that song, Middle of the Memory, You Should Be Here, et cetera, is that, I found so many, like, even guys who all day long, all they write is country songs. When you start talking to them about their native favorite genres, you're sitting there talking about License to Ill and, you know, Run DMC. I was in fourth grade. My father, James Brown, shout out, took me to get the tapes because I was too young to buy them for Raising Hell by Run DMC and Beastie Boys' License to Ill. And my mother took me to see Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet Tour when I was 11. So I was allowed to go to concerts as a kid, really, instead a lot of times, and, like, go to the mall and the movie. And, so it's very lucky because from that background, it sort of showed me, like, I loved, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff and watching the you know, carts, the equipment get moved in and out. And if you, you know, you learn young, if you want to meet people, pick up an amp and carry it backstage, and they don't know the difference. And,
right.
You know, so it's fun to be able to take these behind-the-scenes kind of, and I'm not the first person to think of this, but some of my series that I do these exclusively in the studio, it's also published in Japan. There's a little rock and roll one called Beyond the Beats that came out last spring that had everybody, all the drummers, same thing as songwriters, but it's the drummers from Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Tommy Lee, the first chapter, Aerosmith, Journey, God, Foo Fighters, James Addiction, all the way down the line, CCR, Creedence Clearwater. And anyway, so this has been my favorite, though, of all of them, because I live in Nashville, A, and B, I, you know, I'm a songwriter, I'm more rock, but I know that world enough to know how hard it is. And so for these guys and girls to be able to talk as candidly and openly as they did about it, shouldn't scare anyone. It should hopefully inspire them.
Sure.
But also let them know with a real, 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 like, you know, cold bucket of water, as much as you get excited when a hit hits number one, how hard it is. It's like the NFL odds, you know what I mean? Or the NBA. It's a tough racket, man. So,
very tough racket. You know, when I was in radio, not to interrupt you, but when I was in radio, we went to Nashville several times for different events. And, like, at night, they would have a songwriters roundtable. Not a roundtable, but
they'd
all sit around. And it was absolutely fascinating. I'll never forget it. This one guy got up. I don't know who the writer was, but he said, well, I wrote this song for Alan Jackson. I'm going to play a little bit of it. And he sang it like this. It was like, late one night on the Chattahoochee. And I went, oh, my God, you wrote Chattahoochee? What's interesting about it is their vision of how the song should go, tempo-wise, compared to, you know, the way the hit developed, the
That's
way the hit came out.
That's a fantastic point, man.
Oh,
yeah,
it was just absolutely fascinating. I'm not trying to put him down. I just
it's
thought it was fascinating.
It's in the book, though. That's heavily, heavily gone over. The whole metamorphosis the song takes on, especially in the age now we live in, a track, what they call track guys, like Ross Copperman and Zach Brow, Sam Hunt's producer, and Dirk Spelling. Both those guys in the book is an example. Jesse Frazier. We really have the new generation of people that are the latest. Jimmy Robbins, of course, Ashley Worley does that, Luke Laird, and others. And you really, Chris DeStefano, you really, really get a look at, like, man, like how it's evolved, right? In some hand, technology, got to know Pro Tools, got to know Logic, you know, write on a laptop. But at the same time, to your point, there's as many old school guys that are coming in with acoustic guitars, like Red Akins and Ben Hayslip, and that's how they write.
Yeah.
And they're as country to the bone as you can get, Ronnie Clausen, and they just know their art. So it balances those two worlds out really well.
But that shows the talent of the artist in a way, too. I used to think, the artist,
absolutely.
Well, what kind of talent does that take to listen to somebody else's hit? But it does take a talent to listen to somebody else's hit and envision how it would develop into their style. Like if Florida Georgia Line heard that guy singing, for them to listen to, you know, this guy's style and say, how do we make it a Florida Georgia Line song? That takes a talent as well, right?
Yeah, and we actually have probably the entire Florida Georgia catalog in this book. And so what you get a lot of times, Brian and Tyler are both songwriters in their own rights. And one thing that's really cool to hear, and in fact, those guys, I can't think of the songs up on it because there's 300 number ones in this book total, but those guys even wrote some songs that wound up being hits for other guys.
Really?
You know what I mean? That could have easily gone on their record. So those, you know, the generosity of a lot of these guys too, where, you know, they'll that will happen. You know, sometimes a song will start out for one person and wind up, well, you know, like Thomas Rhett wound up coming into a lot of his early hits that way, and
talented.
Great songwriter in his own right. And had, you know, but yes, you see that camaraderie at play.
Do you find that the personalities of these songwriters are similar? Are they very, like, cerebral people to talk to?
Or? No, they're well, yeah, they have common features that are very different from each other. And that kind of chemistry is what makes a lot of them work. So as an example, you know, one of the things that's featured throughout the book in the way that I wrote it of trying to create these conversational dialogues for the reader where they really are teleported, you know, back to the writing room. And these are the regular writers that work together. So I just sat there and interviewed them as they would, you know, talk together in a room about how a turn of phrase should go or what a hook is or what a hook isn't, or fight about it, or one of them's really got one melody idea they like. And the point is, yeah, a lot of times you would get like a Florida Georgia Line or Rodney Clausen is super laid back. John Rich calls him Rodney Lama because he's so chill. whereas Chris Tompkins is a little more animated, and those guys together, and he's more of a computer. He can be on a computer, and much as Rodney's on an acoustic guitar, those guys together have written some of the biggest hits of the last 20 years. I mean, you know, from Dirt by Florida Georgia Line is one example to all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff. And so there's different writing teams, Josh Osborne and Shane McNally. Ashley Gourley writes with a lot of people, but, you know, you see him show up with different combinations. Zach Crowell and Sam Hunt, who obviously work together. You know, so anyway, the Love Junkies, the Liz Rose, Taylor Swift writer, Lori McKenna, and Hillary Lindsay write together. They wrote Girl Crush, as an example. Mm. But then in the same breath, you get like Lori McKenna wrote Humble and Kind by herself at a kitchen table and, you know, emailed the acoustic demo to Tim McGraw, and they cut it like soon after. Keith Urban is legendary in this book for bringing a writer in, and they'll work for like two laborious days, and then he'll cut it and release it within the week. And to your other question, you get guys like J.T. Harding, who wrote like Different for Girls, or Shane, and a bunch of hits. He wrote his kickoff hit was Smile for Uncle Cracker. So
wow.
He's a totally different personality than somebody like, you know, like a Shane McNally. Or, you know, Hillary Lindsay is going to be a different personality from, you know, Lori McKenna, who's right. A mother of five. Now, she's a mother now herself, but Lori has used her family as the foundation and why we're so privileged to have, you know, such a strong female writing presence. I got really hammered on that in the first book because I was going chronology of who we interviewed, but the second book, we really have like 9 or 10 really strong female, and they're the biggest writers.
Oh, sure. Too.
But you know, Natalie Hemby, you know, like I said, Lori McKenna, Tia Sillers, or what I hope you dance, Charlianne Womack, and Luan Black for Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and all of these different kind of stories that these women have of being mothers. And it's just different from a lot of the, you know, there's a single father here and there, but a lot of times really the spouses of these songwriters are their unsung heroes, right? I call these songwriters the unsung heroes, but these female writers have this incredible insight into A, how to write for female fans, right, which is huge, but also being a parent,
sure.
Writing about motherhood, mm-hmm. Writing about juggling that schedule, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a real privilege to spotlight, hopefully, and give them a little hopeful tribute to that incredible juggling act. Because imagine raising a family, and these people all raise their families together. So I imagine some of these songwriters even carpool. Don't quote me on that. but I mean, it was really cool to see the community that exists among them and the different vantage points of insight because of all these different types of personalities that work so well together. You also get situations of people that are older and younger, you know, by several decades. You know, Tom Douglas is Miranda Lambert, The House That Built Me, and a lot of other hits. He goes all the way back to Little Rock, you know, by Colin Ray. So, which is an early 94. So,
sure.
I mean,
I remember
you really, yeah. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. So that's the fun too, man. This isn't just the last 20 years of country. It's all the last 3 or 4, decades. So whether you're a kid, a millennial that's just growing up, or whether you're in your 40s and you're taking your kids to concerts and introducing them to acts like George Strait or McGraw or whoever, you get the full spectrum of generations of hits in this book. So no one's left out or left aside, if you will, in that regard.
Interesting. Final question for you. Do you think that songwriters, do you think that they really secretly want to become stars? Or do you think that...
that's a good question. So...
did they picture in the early
call
in their,
after this?
I was going to say, did they picture early in their career that I'm doing this to become a star, or is this what developed?
So I'll give you the two categories that falls in. So, yeah. It may take me a little bit beyond because I don't have another call after this, so I can go a little over to explain this. But So there's two categories in that answer. So you had certain people who grew up, and I'm not going to give any names in that side of it. Their song catalogs are what they are today, right? They're brilliant, but they'll fool themselves, joke. I'm stage shy, or I'm really not a singer in the classic sense of the Luke Bryan voice.
Right. Maybe they can't sing their own hits.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But even in the time that they've been in town, through those communities of co-writers and going to other people's writing rounds and being encouraged, they do, in a lot of cases, eventually learn how to get over that stage fright to get up and play their hits, because a lot of people want to hear them from the original form that you were asking about earlier. So there's those people. Now, then on the other end of that spectrum, there's guys like Cole Swindell. Of course, he's a big, star now and continuing to be on the rise, who was a songwriter first but had the aspiration to be a songwriter before he became a star. On the other end of that spectrum, Red Akins came to town in 91, 92 looking to become a star, and he was. He had number ones of his own. He had That Ain't My Truck. That guy's, very respected. And a lot of the guys I interviewed in the book that write with him were almost nervous because he's like a legend in them. You know what I mean? He's an aspiration that they followed, inspirationally, and wound up, here I am in a room with him. But equally, what you have are people like Natalie Hemby, whose Puxico record came out, 10 years after she had her first hit and was a songwriter. And then also Nicole Galyon was an artist. She was on The Voice. But also Lori McKenna. Lori McKenna didn't do her first open mic till 28 years old and didn't release her first album till almost 30. So you really get a hybrid. JT Harding's got a rock band called JTX. Shane McNally was an artist before he broke in as a songwriter.
He had a song, right?
Really,
he had a hit.
Yeah, a lot of them had songs. Ross Copperman was signed as a teenager, in college age, to a label. Jimmy Robbins was signed at 14 to Motown. There are stories of people that had careers, and a lot of them even started out differently than in country. They were rock, they were emo, they were whatever, subgenre you want to talk about, and then wound up just migrating here through one form or another and found this was what, their calling. And what's great about that is they have such a unique perspective to write from both sides, because they've done both.
Because they've done both,
ends
sure.
Yeah.
No, this is fascinating.
To answer your question, it was a healthy mix of both, and I can't say that there was any anomaly, because everyone's had a little bit of some of that. Some cases, they just have a really celebrated critical, album. In other cases, it became a hit. Like Lori McKenna's had The Bird, The Rifle, and now The Tree. And she's winning Grammys in Americana. And we're just really privileged to have her. I mean, she's just, they're all, everyone in this book's very special. But I'm glad to have such vibrant examples across that spectrum. I'll put it like that.
Well, we're lucky to have you do all this research for us, too, because this is a fascinating book.
Oh, man,
book.
Dude.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I pride myself on these books being 100% authorized, 100%, from the horse's mouth of the songwriter. One thing I did do a little bit in here was I would quote a Taylor Swift, as she mentioned, said to USA Today, and sort of to round out a little bit of a song story if I could find them. But you really, everything in this book is designed to really put, country fans who want to learn about how these songs were written in the room as much as songwriters in the room. And then lastly, there's also a completely separate chapter that's just the publishers. And what's really cool in that is, you really can almost get a crash course on music publishing and the business of it, what's important, and the kind of publisher you look for, the temperament, what you need to walk into a writing session with, right from the horse's mouths of the people that do this every day on Music Row, pitching songs, and whose livelihood and protecting the families and livelihoods of these songwriters depends on successfully continuing to have hits. So you really get a very vivid perspective on the creative side of it as well as the business side. And I appreciate you having me on. The book's out October 15th. And really enjoyed talking to you, man. Thank you.
I enjoyed talking to you as well, and good luck with the book. I have a book coming out, too. It's
cool. What is that? Now, let's plug that one. Is yours on radio?
No, it's on my podcast. It's a book about authors and how they have the discipline to write 45 books. I'm going to write a book about Jake Brown.
I'll interview with you for that if it's not done yet. You do another volume of it.
I can't even imagine.
Dude, it's your mind just, if your mind just kind of keeps going, and fortunately for me, I work, 15, 16-hour days. I have my wife works more of a conventional schedule, so we're kind of opposite hours. But, my dog hangs out with me, and I just kind of, you work on one thing for this day, you work on that thing for the day, and then that other thing that night. And then you're constantly interviewing people, too, and in some cases you're interviewing them for books that aren't going to be out for a couple of years. So it's just a matter of juggling the balance of, you have to constantly be networking and looking for interview access. I always usually get a referral from somebody who'll send the email directly, so I don't have to stick around with managers. But sometimes managers are really useful. It just depends. But the other half of it is just to, constantly, remember the mind's a muscle, and creatively, and the songwriters say this throughout the book. I can't imagine it's any different. If I'm not in a studio, I'm at a laptop writing. It's like you just do it every day and hope that people like what you're reading and hope that the publisher that you convinced to spend, the money. I mean, that's the thing with a publisher. You go to a publisher and you're saying, hey, man, I have this series idea and I want an advance of this amount, and I want you to have a guaranteed, hardcover pressing of this amount, and I want to make sure I keep the rights to the audiobook because I want to make it. It's really an entrepreneurial grind because you have to be constantly hustling, and that's the reality of it. I had someone ask me the first interview I just did before this one. They said, if you had advice, to someone that wants to come to town here, be a writer or a songwriter, and I said, it's the same thing. When you're young, you'll work for somebody. If you have a job where you're working a day job, right, that you really hate, and you know it's only temporary, or even if you have a boss somewhere, a job you like that you really can't stand, but you're learning from them, take the hits.
Sure.
Take the internship you don't get paid for and have to have another job, because
you'll learn.
You're going to get out on your own eventually, and then you'll always have this motivation, that dude or girl or whoever that you had to work for that you couldn't stand, to never go back to it.
That's so true.
It doesn't change in your 40s, man. I've been doing this 20 years, and it's just to be a competitive anything in the entertainment business, you have to just be constant, as in radio, you have to just be constantly grinding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't wait to read the book. And now I want to
thank
read
you. I'll make sure you get a copy. I'll have them next week, and I'll make sure we send one right off to you.
Oh, I really appreciate it.
Everything.
Jake Brown, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, man, thank you. Sorry for going on too long, but I'm excited to
be
finally out, done writing, and start promoting. So thank you again, man.
Thank you again. By the way, I'm sure he wouldn't be upset if I mentioned Nashville Songwriter 1, the first book, because he talks about the background of hits like Always on My Mind from Willie Nelson, George Jones' Tennessee Whiskey, Jesus Take the Wheel from Carrie Underwood, We Own the Night from Lady Antebellum, the background of all these songs, Play It Again from Luke Bryan, Rascal Flatts' Fast Cars and Freedom, a ton of songs and a ton of songwriters in that book as well. So especially if you're a songwriter or an aspiring songwriter, these books are probably like a handbook. You might even get some really fantastic tips about writing songs, and maybe the idea that no matter what you're thinking of, you should write it down because you never know where a song is going to come from. And not only songs, but song parodies. You never know where a song parody is going to come from. And speaking of that, I'm going to be doing a gig on November the 2nd at the Eden Cafe in Albany, New York. Well, it does come up Albany on your GPS, although it's actually Loudonville. The Eden Cafe is right next to DeRaymond's Restaurant. I'll be there on November the 2nd, Friday night, by the way, from 7:30 to 9:30. It's a small piano bar, but a lot of fun. And I'm going to be doing song parodies, some from others, some that I've written. And if you have a few funny ones that you want to bring in and grab the mic and sing along to, it's just a fun little club. Again, November the 2nd, Eden Cafe, from 7:30 to 9:30. You can go to eventbrite.com and type in Richie Phillips to get the tickets. The tickets are only $7.50. Unless you want to sit around the piano and throw, tomatoes at me, you can do that. The tickets are a little more for that. Again, go to eventbrite.com and get the tickets right there. I would love to see you. This podcast is really a lot of fun for me. I've covered everybody from kids in my neighborhood to famous people. And we're going to go famous route next time. He is comedian Eddie Brill. If that doesn't ring a bell, he was the talent coordinator for David Letterman. Late Night with David Letterman. I am dying to talk to this top comedian here on Take It to the Top. That's going to be my next podcast, which comes up 2 weeks from this one. I hope you will join in, especially if you're a comedian or an aspiring comedian or somebody who likes to laugh. And I hope that's everyone, because there's not a lot to laugh about when you turn on CNN lately. So I hope you will tune in. And if you have an idea for another podcast of somebody else you'd like to get on, all you got to do is email me, richie1077@gmail.com. Or go to Facebook. It's Ryman Richie Phillips on Facebook. And I will try as hard as I possibly can to
take it to the top.